Following shir is dedicated le'ilui nishmat Leah bat Yaakov u'pesya Meir. Allah shalom, may our neshama benefit from our learning. The following is a quick recording of a shir I was supposed to give in person before I tested positive. And it's called Shai Agnon's Lag Ba'Omer Celebration. I want to begin by showing you source number one. We're talking about Shlomo Yosef Agnon, born Shlomo Yosef Tchatchkes, one of the greatest Israeli writers of the 20th century, and specifically his fascination with the date of Lag BaOmer. So you see the article which appeared in the journal Hatzofeh in May of 1996. In the interest of preserving my throat, I'm just going to read my English translation, but you can see the original Hebrew on the sheet as well. He says, this is Dr. Tzvi Kaspi, here are Agnon's words regarding events which occurred on Lag BaOmer. On Lag BaOmer 1909, I merited to ascend to the land of Israel, and I walked the land of the living for 6 years, the law of a Jewish slave. And on the seventh, I descended to the diaspora. We know that he then moved to Germany. In an essay, on the day I became an honorary citizen of Jerusalem, we read, our masters of blessed memory said in the Talmud, we roll in merit for a meritorious day. When I look at the events which happened to me on Lag BaOmer, it appears to me that the sages said this not only for national Jewish events, but also for individual Jews like me. I entered the chuppah with my wife on Lag BaOmer. I completed my work in the heart of the seas on Lag BaOmer. I began writing my book, Days of Awe, on Lag BaOmer. Also, many other mundane good events rolled along. The Swedish translation of And the Crooked Shall Be Made Straight arrived on Lag BaOmer. The news I had received a doctorate from American scholars arrived on Lag BaOmer. And here, a miracle done for me more than 50 years ago at the Hilula of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai in Meron, when a floor collapsed and some 27 Jews were killed. Obviously, that resonates for us as we approach the anniversary of the terrible tragedy in Meron last year. He says, I, who had been standing with all of those holy ones a short while earlier, remained alive, in truth, because of the merit of the day. Leaving aside the philosophical implications of that last statement about his survival of that terrible disaster, what are we supposed to make of Agnon's comments about Lag BaOmer? Is this a batch of coincidences? Did Agnon think it was a batch of coincidences? What in the world is this? So, a little bit of background on Shai Agnon. He's born in the Ukraine in 1888. As I said, his birth name was Shlomo Yosef Tchatchkes. His father was an ordained rabbi, worked in the fur trade. Agnon learned in Cheder until age 9, and then his father took over and taught him. He learned Torah, but he also learned general humanities and sciences. At the age of 8, he began to write in Hebrew and in Yiddish. Write meaning stories, poems. At age 15, he published a poem about the Mekubal Yosef de la Reina. In the year 1908, he made Aliyah and he moved to Yafo. He tried to be a farmer first, but he failed. Then he found success as a writer. He published a story called Agunot, and he took his pen name of Agnon from that. That story deserves its own treatment. He met Chaim Nachum Bialik there on a tour by Bialik. He became involved with other writers. It appears that he also shifted a little bit in terms of his religious observance at that time, but he was close with Rav Avraham Yitzchak Kook. He considered himself a student of Rav Kook. In 1913, he moves to Germany. First, he goes there with Arthur Ruppin of the Jewish Agency on a particular trip, and then he stays. He meets his wife, Esther Marx. He's supported by Zalman Schocken of Schocken Books, and he becomes close with other writers there. 1924, he comes back to Israel, moves to Talpiot, builds a home there. It's destroyed in the pogroms of 1929, but he stays and he keeps on writing. There are lots of important notes that I could add regarding his literary career. One very interesting note is that, according to recent research, he edited the Prayer for the State of Israel at the request of Chief Rabbi Herzog. You can see that in source number two, on your sheet. And of course, on December 10th, 1966, He and Nelly Sachs are awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature. And I gave you a piece of his Nobel speech in source number 3, the speech which he gives before the King of Sweden, which begins, "It is said in the Talmud, in Jerusalem the men of discrimination did not sit down to dine in company until they knew who their companions were to be. So I will now tell you who am I, whom you have agreed to have at your table. As a result of the historic catastrophe in which Titus of Rome destroyed Jerusalem and Israel was exiled from its land, I was born in one of the cities of the exile. But always I regarded myself as one who was born in Jerusalem. In a dream, in a vision of the night, I saw myself standing with my brother Levites in the Holy Temple, singing with them the songs of David, King of Israel, melodies such as no ear has heard since the day our city was destroyed and its people went into exile. I suspect that the angels in charge of the shrine of music, fearful lest I sing in wakefulness what I had sung in dream, made me forget by day what I had sung at night. For if my brethren, the sun, were to hear, they would be unable to bear their grief over the happiness they have lost. To console me for having prevented me from singing with my mouth, they enable me to compose songs in writing," and indeed he views his writing as the equivalent of the songs of the Levium, of the Levites, he himself being a Levi. Agnon wrote short stories as well as longer books. He wrote about many different themes, the human experience in general, religion, connection to God for sure, Zionism, the Jewish community, Hasidim and Misnagdim, and his stories are always full of references to Tanakh, to Medrash, to Talmud, to Halacha. There's always a lot there. There's a lot more to be said, but really our point this evening is actually not about analyzing an Agnon story, so I'll hold off on that. Agnon is very dramatic in the way that he presents himself. He talks about being born on Tisha B'Av, although he was actually born on the 18th of Av. He made Aliyah, he says, on Lag BaOmer, although it looks like it was actually 3 weeks earlier. But he's very dramatic. You see that in the Nobel speech excerpt that I brought you in source number 3. So, in order to understand how Agnon views Lag BaOmer and why he says what you saw in source number 1, I think we need to understand what the Omer is about and what Lag BaOmer is about. What was Agnon looking at when he came up with this? So, biblically, of course, we know the Omer is the period between when we bring an offering of the new barley on the second day of Pesach, and when we bring the Shtei HaLechem, 2 loaves of bread from the new wheat, 49 days later, 50 days later. If you take a look at source number 4, you see the Psukim, it's actually this week's Parsha outside of Israel, the Parsha of Emor. you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Shabbat, meaning the day after Pesach, after that Yom Tov. From the day you bring the Omer of Elevation, 7 complete weeks they shall be, until the day after the 7th week, you shall count 50 days, and you shall bring a new gift to God. So the Omer is this period of moving from the new barley to the new wheat. It's like a communal act of Bikurim, of bringing your first fruits. That's one way to look at this period. A second level is brought in the Sefer HaChinuch in source number 5. Sefer HaChinuch, which we don't know the name of the author. Some thought it was Rav Aaron Halevi. Others disagree. Either way, it's traced to 13th century Spain. We are commanded to count from the day after the first holiday of Passover until the day the Torah was given to demonstrate our great desire for that honored day. This is a period of love. Love of the giving of the Torah. But within this period of time, this 49 or 50 day period of time, we get 33 days of grieving. And that traces to source number 6, although source number 6 will not mention anything about 33 days. It simply says that Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of students, and all of them died in the same season, for they had not treated each other with respect, and the world was desolate until he set up his new students. You know, what this means, that they didn't treat each other with respect, is a great discussion, but not for right now. These days, this period of their death, is generally associated with some point within the Omer, but there are multiple ways to calculate it. Some do from Pesach until day 34 of the Omer, some do from Pesach until day 33 of the Omer, some do from Rosh Chodesh Iyar until before Shavuot. Yeah, all these different ways to do it, but this is observed as a period of grieving. No haircuts, no shaving, no dancing, and no music, because it can lead to dancing. It's legitimate to ask, how can such happy days, this happy period of time, be turned into days of mourning? One answer to suggest is that it's not really a period of happiness as much as a period of growth. That's really what it's about. It's the growth, bringing our new fruit to God, going to the Beis HaMikdash, the temple, getting to receive the Torah. It's a period of potential, which brings with it a certain celebration, not joy per se, perhaps. But Lag BaOmer becomes a celebration. Where did that come from? Why does Lag BaOmer become a celebration? So some suggest that it's tied to Rabbi Akiva as the day that the students stopped dying. If you take a look at source number 8, number 7 was just a litany of positions regarding which days to observe as the period of mourning. But if you take a look at source number 8, Rabbi Menachem Meiri in 13th century France says, all of these students died between Pesach and Shavuot, and there is a tradition from the Gaonim that the death stopped on Lag BaOmer. So the Lag BaOmer becomes a celebration because Rabbi Akiva's students stop dying, and along with that, there is a notion that that's when Rabbi Akiva starts with the new students. And source number 9, I brought you just from an Eish HaTorah article, because honestly, I haven't been able to find a source for it, but they make this claim that it's when Rabbi Akiva decides to start again. I'd be very curious to know where they got that idea, that that he actually starts building again on that day. Nonetheless, that's the idea. And key point, those students of Rabbi Akiva, this is legitimate, this is well-sourced, the students of Rabbi Akiva are the ones who save the spoken Torah, Torah Sheba'al Peh. If you take a look at source number 10, you find a list of important sages who were considered the authors or canonizers of critical works of the spoken Torah. Take a look at number 10, please. Sanhedrin, Pei Vav Amud Aleph. Stam Mas Nisin Rabbi Meir. If you see a Mishnah, and the Mishnah reports a ruling, but it doesn't say whose ruling it is, the assumption is that is Rabbi Meir talking. Not that Rabbi Meir authored the Mishnah, but Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi authored or canonized the Mishnah, and when it was his Rebbe, Rabbi Meir, who was speaking, then he just presented it. Hey, there's no debate. This is, this is the undisputed position. A Tosefta, sources that were contemporary to the Mishnah but were not included in the Mishnah, were included in the Tosefta, literally Tosefta, that which is added. The unattributed Tosefta is assumed to be Rabbi Nechemya. A Sifra. Sifra is halachic medrash on the books of the book of Vayikra. That's Rabbi Yehuda. The Sifri, which is halachic medrash on Bamidbar Devarim, that's Rabbi Shimon. And all of them are within the thought of Rabbi Akiva because all of them were his students. We have different lists of who the students of Rabbi Akiva were with whom he started again. If you take a look, though, back at source number 6, you see that a list there, the version in the Gemara, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. So you have Rabbi Shimon, you have Rabbi Meir, you have Rabbi Yehuda. They're key to saving Tarsha Be'al Peh. So some of our celebration of Lag BaOmer centers on Rabbi Akiva and his students. Then a lot of what people write about Lag BaOmer is about Rabbi Akiva's student, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who of course is credited with authorship of the Zohar. If you take a look at source number 11, we learn the story of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai being stuck in a cave. The story goes, there are three sages who are sitting together, and Rabbi Yehuda is one of the sages, and he praises the Romans for the wonderful things they built. Rabbi Yossi has nothing to say, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, come on, they created it for their own needs, and not necessarily positive needs either. You can see the text in source number 11. The Romans are informed of this, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is sentenced to death. So he and his son Rabbi Elazar run away, and they go into a cave, and they stay in the cave for an extended period of time, for 12 years, until they find out via Eliyahu Anavi that they can come out, and how they emerge from the cave is its own story. So if you take a look at source number 12, you find Rabbi Chiel Michel Epstein, author of the halachic work Aruch HaShulchan, saying that Lag BaOmer is marked as the yahrzeit of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, as well as the day when he left the cave. And again, of course, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is one of those new students of Rabbi Akiva, so you have a connection. But the second element of Lag BaOmer, this period, this day of celebration, is about the student, Rabbi Akiva's student, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So we have, again, just to review, the Omer is supposed to be a positive period. Positive because of our national bringing of new offerings to God. Positive because of our love of Sinai and the giving of the Torah. We get these days of grieving somewhere within the Omer period. However, there's a celebration of Lag BaOmer, either because the students of Rabbi Akiva stop dying and he starts rebuilding and saves Torah Shebe'al Peh, the spoken Torah, or alternatively, because of Rabbi Akiva's student, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who gets out of the cave on that day. Now let's talk about Agnon's fascination with Lag BaOmer, right? Where he said it was the day he made Aliyah, it was his wedding, he completed this book, he started that book, the Swedish translation arrived, he got his honorary doctorate, and so on and so on and so on. To Agnon, Lag BaOmer is a day of birth and renewal. Right? Remember he said, Megalgalin Zechus Liom Zakai. God makes a day special. It's already special, God makes it even more special. So to him, Lag BaOmer is already special as a day of birth and renewal. That fits Rabbi Akiva's narrative. Right? The end of the deaths of his students, and certainly if he starts his new group of students on that day. It fits the narrative of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai emerging from the cave and into life, and even with the idea that it's his yahrzeit, the day he dies, because there's a notion that the day that the tzaddik dies is the day of purification for the world and renewal of potential. It also fits, by the way, with ideas from Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, which we're not going to get into right now, but Shivchei Haran speaks of Rabbi Nachman of Breslov leaving for his pilgrimage to Israel on Lag BaOmer, mirrored in Agnon's act as well, which we mentioned in source number one about him making his pilgrimage. So Agnon sees Lag BaOmer as the start of his projects, the day when his projects bear fruit. It's a day of birth. It's a day of renewal. Agnon, with his romantic vision, sees Lag BaOmer as consistent with that. So what are we supposed to learn from this? Shai Agnon, brilliant writer, wins the Nobel Prize for Literature, sees Lag BaOmer as a day of special meaning for him, a day of birth, a day of growth, which is what the meaning should be for us as well. But what's the bigger picture? What are we meant to learn from here? So I think we're meant to look for symbols in the calendars of our own lives. Agnon pointed us to the fact that the Gemara says, Megalgalin Zechus Al-Yedei Zakai, that we take a day that is already good and Hashem, gives that day additional good things, as well as days that are bad things, right? We have the Adar Nisan good things, we have Av as a bad thing. People do that, you know, with their birthdays, right? They'll say, this is a special positive day for me. People do that for the yard sites they observe as well. We do it in Halacha. The Rama writes, I was going to bring it on the sheet, but I think I left it out in the interest of space. But the Rama writes in Avinah Ezer Samach Dalad Gimel 64:3 that you're supposed to get married in the first half of the month as the moon is growing. We look for that kind of a symbol associated with that particular date. You see it in Tanakh, at the start of the second Beis HaMikdash, the second temple period, when Ezra comes out of Bavel. He leaves Bavel on the first of Nisan, and he arrives in Israel on the first of Av, leaving Bavel on the first of Nisan, associating his departure from Bavel with the Jews getting out of Egypt in Nisan, and arriving on the first of Av to regenerate Jewish life in Israel. That's Ezra chapter 7, sentence 9. Also, in Nehemiah, we learn that Nehemiah, when he left to go to Israel, we find out in Nehemiah chapter 1 and in chapter 6, sentence 15, that he left in Nisan, and he arrived at the start of Av, and he came to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Not only that, he chooses, in chapter 6, sentence 15, he chooses the 25th of Elul for his work of rebuilding. That's the first day of creation. 25th of Elul is the beginning of Maaseh Bereishis. We find this with many prophecies. The messages of Haggai, in that short book of Haggai, are almost all associated with powerful dates on the Jewish calendar. As a writer, Agnon recognized the inspirational power of calendar dates. He saw Lag BaOmer representing renewal and growth, and he tied it into events of renewal and growth in his own life. And I think that's a message for us, to look for inspiration from the calendar. A birthday, an anniversary, a day you met a good friend, a day you recovered from something terrible, whatever it is, to turn those into days of hope. The Gemara talks about creating holidays on days when a miracle happened. This is for us to do, to turn those into days of hope each and every year.